the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarron.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are returning to talk about miniatures war games. We talked about three different minis games: Heroescape, Necromolds, and X-Wing, or Star Wars X-Wing, or
Star Wars X-Wing in a miniature tactical game.
Yeah. and I guess very broadly, if we want a definition, which we probably do, miniatures war games have a few common characteristics. Generally, they've got minis.
Yep.
So you have
miniatures,
detailed plastic pieces, or I guess Play-Doh pieces, or
potentially, but probably not.
That are representing units generally very concretely, so that they're not like representing a squad. You've got
right.
A dragon is a dragon, right? A TIE fighter is a TIE fighter.
Very literal representation.
Yeah. They're about combat generally. I'm not aware of any economic minis games, although that could be a cool thing.
I've thought about that so long.
That might be a cool idea.
It'd be tough.
They often involve some amount of customization. So, you know, you customize your army and then deploy it. They tend to be games of attrition. You know, you're trying to kill everything. Again, unless there's an economic minis game out there. And let's see, any other common characteristics I've missed?
Would you say
distance,
like,
is important?
Yeah, distance and physically moving around.
Physical space.
Yeah, there's some sort of a map or a board. There's often obstacles.
A literal physical space,
yes.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Right, yes. You move things around.
Yeah.
Tactical positioning is important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're very free-form movement where you're measuring with some sort of ruler.
Yeah.
And you can move in any direction, or sometimes like X-Wing, you put down templates and then you can move in a certain direction. Or
Heroescape,
where it's hexes, but that one also has like terrain that you're moving up and down on.
And I would say a discrete movement like Heroescape tends to be the exception more than the rule. I feel like most minis games have some form of measurement.
I think they really want it to be more of a simulative experience
about
war and about battles.
They do tend to be very simulative.
Yeah.
And
this is maybe me just pulling something out of my derriere, but I think that they were originally developed actually to help people, like, with war.
Yeah. I remember, I'm sure I read something about, like, one of the earliest minis games involved like mini cannons that were some launching things, and then they'd hit toy soldiers which would fall over.
Yeah.
Oh, like actually
sort of a launching. Dexterity.
Okay.
I read about this a long time ago.
Well, I think even like the Pentagon has, you know, backed funding for some game designers to help them with their war games and figuring out how much different things will do. And understanding that scale, which is, I think, a really fascinating, terrible, fascinating thing.
Yeah.
But it's really...
Yeah, I was watching a YouTube video about that.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're definitely hiring. But, you know, this YouTuber was barely holding back his own thoughts on it about, you know, like the morals of being a game designer that's working on war simulation. But the interesting thing was they were talking about, like, they're not so much these days working on like physical war as much as like digital warfare and
cyber attacks,
more negotiation
type diplomacy.
Things for so
they're playing diplomacy to learn more about diplomacy.
maybe
and they all hate each other now. It's a whole thing.
So, minis war games.
Minis war games.
One thing I noticed, and I have maybe possibly a controversial take on this, but all three games that we played had defense dice.
Mm.
And maybe this was a coincidence I don't know if most minis games have defense dice.
I don't know either.
But I have somewhat strong feelings on defense dice. Specifically, I think they're a bad idea. And
the, hot take.
Maybe you guys can help me understand why they.
What's your take? Well,
so I was gonna go on a whole tangent, but we can start with this first. With Ananda, unless you want me to just go on my tangent, I can just swing right into it.
I can come back
so
to defense
to sound
dice.
Like
well,
it, rules
it's based
and
on defense.
Yeah, yeah, okay, so, yes, yes. Yeah. You go ahead.
So it comes from RPGs, specifically D&D. And I just figured this out a long time ago, and it's probably obvious to a lot of people, but your natural AC in D&D is usually 10, which is half of a d20. And so instead of having a defense die in D&D, they just give you the average result, and then you add your armor modifier, your dex modifier, and then that's a static number, so you're not all rolling dice all the time.
Yes.
That saves time, that keeps it clear, you have a clear target number.
Yes, and Mage Wars does the same thing. Mage Wars, you have static armor.
Yep.
And only the attacker rolls.
Sure.
And then you compare, you know, you use the armor to subtract from non-critical hits. And I think that is the correct way to do it for a couple of reasons. Mm-hmm. Because the main issue I have with defense dice is that it's asking players to spend effort without a positive reward.
Oh, interesting.
First of all, usually the best you can hope for with defense is to...
Not get hurt.
Is to not get hurt.
Yeah.
Not getting hurt is great, but that's not very exciting.
It's not a benefit.
Right. You're doing a lot of work for something that's not that exciting. Obviously, it's not necessary to have defense dice because you already have a randomizer with the attack dice.
Right.
And you can also run into situations where you roll really, really well as the defender.
Right.
And then the attacker completely whiffs, and it's like, well, okay, I just rolled 8 shields, and you rolled nothing, and so my great roll is completely wasted.
Did Necromold solve this?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Necromold.
You get the gem bonus, right?
You win the battle. You go into an engagement.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, you win.
In melee. In range, they still have the defense dice problem where...
Yeah.
You're rolling for nothing, really. But in melee, only one person can win.
Yeah. And whoever gets the higher number, although shields are less common than the attacks.
Right.
Like, if you win with shields, then you still win that bout, and you squash the other person.
Right. So, yeah. Which is a counterattack.
Yeah,
right.
And the attacker has the advantage of having, and more option to... Use that like gem bonus, whatever it was called,
gem rage.
Gem rage. Thank you. Yeah, where they get to reroll their gem.
Yeah.
Dice.
That's a pretty great one.
Yeah. So right. So Necromold avoids this.
The attack and defense are on the same die. Is that right?
Yeah, they're all the same type of die.
Yeah.
Same with HeroScape, which I thought interesting in both those.
So originally, HeroScape had red attack dice and blue defense dice.
Right.
Which was quite nice, but then they changed it to just white dice that had both the attack and defense symbol.
Sure.
Well, okay, I'll do the counterpoint to attack and defense dice. Because I think, you know, I am always for efficiency and in game design and elegance. But I do think in this kind of game, half the fun is like rolling and seeing what you're going to do. In terms of like dopamine fun levels.
Yeah.
So I would say as long as there's some attack going on, it's like, I don't know. I think it might feel bad if it's just like, oh, the attacker rolls and then you don't get to do anything. You're just getting hit.
Yeah. So in my RPG that I've been working on, I actually only have it be the players that make checks. The GM does not. And so if the GM is attacking you with a monster, then you roll a defense, and it's a static attack value. And so if you can overcome that, then you've done something. It feels like you're actually actively participating in what's going on, even though you're being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get out of the way? Do you dodge it? Because it's more about that person's perspective.
Yeah.
In a two-player game, it's really interesting because like I see the value of defense there, but I also agree with Ananda that like, if the best you can do is to not get hurt, like maybe you just did something really risky and like went behind enemy lines and you just fended off like 30 guys, that feels really great, defense dice. But if it's just one person, they just took a shot at you, it's like, okay, well, I blocked it, I guess. Or
yeah.
It doesn't feel as important.
I feel like at the very least, if you want to roll defense dice, there should be something that can happen. Like, you know, a counterattack or something else.
Or you get, like, you know, inspiration, you know, for a D&D term. Like, or you just get something that's just like...
There needs...
You feel confident now. You feel good. You get to do something with that in the future.
Yeah, perfect. There needs to be more at stake, or not at stake, but more that the defender can gain from their effort.
Yeah, agreed.
And I'll do a counterpoint to.
Oh God! Wait, are you a double agent right now?
What does that? What does that mean?
Are you supporting him?
Coming back around? Well, no.
Okay.
So I think these particular games we played did the dice well for attack and defense. Aside from, I do like your idea of defender getting something.
Yeah.
But the worst case scenario to me is when you roll some dice and maybe they're like D6s, and then the defender rolls some dice, and then you have to do math.
And then comparing the math.
And I feel like I've given this advice in playing a few prototypes lately where it's like, you're doing the thing, but then you have to do math to actually see what the outcome is. Versus like Heroescape and Necromolds and X-Wing actually are very clear. They're just symbols. It's like, this cancels this, this cancels this. So it's very obvious to see who's winning.
I got quickly. 1 point on you. Aha!
Yep. I think that's the way to do it. Versus math before, because the whole goal with rolling dice is to have you know what the stakes are. This thing happens, and within like a split second, you can see what was good or not.
Right.
And you can kind of do that with D6s, because just physically you can see the amount of dots. But you still have to do some calculating sometimes with, oh, wait, but my armor is +2.
I got +3 dice in that roll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, you can slim that down. Like, I think all three of the games we played did an awesome job.
Well, and like just to bring up the elephant in the room, Warhammer is a very, very common, very popular miniatures war game. And they use the tiny D6s. That are pips. They just have the number pips. And so, like, you're rolling, you know, hands full of D6s to do these different attacks and things. And I absolutely understand the draw. Like, you know, when you cast Fireball in D&D, you want to have all the D6s and you get to add them all up. It's like, ooh, this is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not comparing that to, like, their defense of, like, 5 D6s. It's like, okay. your brain will just shut down.
Yep.
Unless you're super into arithmetic.
You want to keep the numbers low.
Yeah, like 1, 2.
Well, and the other approach, I know we're just talking about dice here, but that's a big part of it. The other approach, though, is that like certain numbers are successes. So like 6s are success. Mm. So you roll a crap ton of dice and then only the 6s hit, for example, or 5s.
I mean, that's effectively like the symbols.
Right.
Sure.
Right. You're just.
But it can just put two. But it can scale based on like
this character, a 2 through 6 is successful. This character, 5 or 6 is successful.
Yeah.
Let's you read. I hear you.
Not the best method, but the thing that's nice about that method is you can, no matter how many dice you have, like maybe you only need to roll 1 6 to make it happen, and then you won't be like adding up all the pips on all the dice. It's not just, if you get a success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Can I share something from Junkernauts?
Of course.
The dice system in Junkernauts.
Yes.
So in Junkernauts, I don't have defense dice.
Right.
And I have counterattacks. And the way that the dice work is there's 3 things you can roll on the die. You can roll a 0, a 1, or a 2. And you roll some number of dice depending on the size of your bot. But if you roll a 0, you get recoil, which lets you move 1 space, which is a good thing. And if you roll a 2, you overheat and you take 1 damage, which is a bad thing. So there is...
But you deal 2 damage.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is a penalty for getting a crit. And there is compensation for getting a miss, which I feel like is important. Part
and,
of
Yeah, and for the Defender, it feels good when I've played. And someone, like, they do extra damage to me, but then I can at least say, ha-ha, you caught on fire.
That's right.
Lost your nail gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a silver lining for your opponent rolling really well. And similarly, on the zero side, it's a silver lining for you rolling poorly.
Mm-hmm. And it's a funny thing, too, because, like, you actually put a piece of fire on
right.
them.
Right, yes.
Well, and the recoil, I imagine, I haven't played it, I don't think, with recoil. Maybe I played it once with recoil. But just, like, kind of like the extra chaos, like, oh, I rolled a zero, gonna move that way. And just like, oh, and now I run into this thing, and that does this thing. It just feels nice to be able to work on a different strategy after that fails. You can have maybe do an instant retreat, like, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. This is funny, because I don't think we really talked hardly at all about the dice in any of the game.
Yeah, during the actual episodes.
But this is great.
Well, that's why we do overview episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess one other thing is hit points.
Mm-hmm.
Because in a Minis War game, you have a bunch of units on the board, and keeping track of hit points unit to unit can be awkward.
Yeah.
Depending on how many there are. I mean, if you've got 3 units, it's not that bad. But if you've got like 15...
Oh, man.
It's kind of difficult. And games like Heroescape and Necromolds.
Having like the minions.
Right, yes. Yeah. There's a bunch of units that have 1 hit point, basically, and they're relying on their defenses to not die. So, like, what do you think about hit points? Should we have hit points? Like, are they...
Oh, man. That's a whole conversation. So, for like miniatures war games, if I'm thinking like a big... army size miniature war game like Warhammer, I personally do not want to micromanage every unit specific health. Mm-hmm. That sounds overwhelming. That sounds insane. If I have, you know, my 3 ships, 4 ships going into battle, I want to have as much understanding of like how they'll do, and having multiple hits I think is great. So I would say I'd lean towards the X-Wing way versus like Necromolds, where you have more of a chess situation where, you know, they hit each other. As long as you win, they're dead. They're squashed. No matter how big the thing is, no matter what it is. But, you know, the bigger things are better fighters, so they're maybe not going to die as easy. So,
I think if you were to listen back to our tactical combat series.
Whoa. That was like over a year ago.
It was. I probably explained why I don't like hit points in games back then.
You did.
And, I basically came to the conclusion that I think it's more interesting if you have like chess type things where you have a lot of different units and they, but they can all die if they're vulnerable in a vulnerable spot. But I think maybe I'm changing my tune after playing these games.
Oh, really?
Wow.
I think what I didn't like on some of the tactical combat games with hit points is that a lot of them feel like you just end up kind of like facing off against each other and not really, there's not that much advantage to moving around.
Right.
You're just, because you're obviously just going to keep shooting at each other.
Yeah.
But like the way it's done in X-Wing is cool because you have the momentum thing that's, so I think it really depends for me on how interesting the movement and everything else is about the game.
Yeah.
And because hit points are important because otherwise, X-Wing, you just die right away. Oh, you don't get to actually like do much with your ship.
Yeah, if our ships all went out and as soon as they encountered each other, they just died.
Yeah,
I'd be like, oh, well, that's terrible. Disappointing.
So, okay, that's a really interesting point because, like, what I'm hearing here is that like one of the problems with hit points in some games is that they're sort of just prolonging the same game state for a while, right? Like you keep trading blows and nothing changes.
Yep.
But in X-Wing, the movement is changing the context completely.
Oh, yeah.
So even if you do a little bit of damage and it doesn't kill the ship, next turn your ships are going to be somewhere else, so you're not repeating the same game state.
Yep. And I think Heroescape would suffer that for me if there wasn't a direction that I was trying to go to, you know, in that
like an objective or like
in that objective we had to get and up the cliffside get to save that one guy from
that one dude from that one place
and
from the samurai archers
Necromold suffers a little bit from the, oh, we're just like going straight at each other and killing each other. And it's like chess, but just like straight into each other. But yeah, it's funny because they're going to die quickly and they literally smash each other.
Yeah. I almost won, though, through some weird maneuvering with my little guy. That was a weird thing I did.
Yeah.
I do really like how in Necromolds, most of the time an attack means someone is going to die.
Yeah.
which really keeps things moving forward.
Yeah.
I guess the other point about Heroescape is that, yes, in general, having hit points stalls things. But also, you may have characters who are really, really cool and you don't want to lose them. And it feels really bad to lose them. And hit points help a little bit with that by keeping them alive a bit longer. And one really good thing I think Heroescape does is it separates units into two classes. You've got heroes who have multiple health.
Yep.
And then you have minions who only have one health and are sort of cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And I think... Yeah, maybe in general you might want to take that to the extreme and have like one guy who has health and is super cool, and then a bunch of guys who are still cool but can die in one hit.
Yeah.
So that's sort of like the best of both worlds. But you don't want too many guys with a lot of health or it's going to stall the game.
Yeah, because Charlie had a lot of ninjas that all had health, but not any. Did you have any minions?
No.
I don't think you did.
Yes, I did. The Maro Warriors.
Right. Yeah.
That,
from Mar.
Yep.
From the planet Mar.
But the nice thing with the minions, one might die, but you still have many more that have the same ability that you can still play with. So.
And my zombies could just destroy something and come back, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, if you have one guy who has health and a bunch of guys who don't, a very natural victory condition would be kill the guy who has health. And that's also nice because losing health usually doesn't make you weaker.
Yeah.
Which is one lesson I learned on Junkernauts, actually.
Oh, interesting.
So, okay, I have another.
I have a Junkernauts takeaway too.
Welcome to Junkernauts, everyone.
This is another story from the development of Junkernauts. So originally, units' health is basically equal to the tools that are attached to them, right? You build your robots by attaching a bunch of tools to a chassis, and so as you lost tools, your combat power would weaken. And I discovered that it stalls things a bit because your bots get weaker. But there's another issue, which is I think it's important in these games that there's sort of a big drop off in power between alive and dead.
Oh,
because that is like you get a big reward from killing something.
Yeah.
And less of a reward for weakening it. So killing things is very exciting.
Oh, sure.
But if things just get weaker as they lose health, then it's not that exciting, right? Killing isn't that much different than damaging.
It's actually the opposite of the curve you're looking for in terms of excitement.
Yeah, it's like no matter what you do, it's going to deteriorate at some rate, right, as opposed to staying really strong. And so you're worried that, oh, if it survives another turn, it's going to do something really cool. Well, it's not going to do something really cool because it's been weakened.
It's lost all of its weapons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think one really important lesson I learned is in these sort of games, and this is what we saw in all these games, is that you want things to stay strong until they're dead. Like, losing HP in general should not make things weaker. Otherwise, it's just, when they die, it's sort of an afterthought.
Yeah. Like, oh, I guess I'll take him out. He only had one weapon left, but you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, my Junkernauts takeaway was going to be that, and I promise I won't do double takeaways in this episode, because...
Did you notice it last time? Did you see it? Did you catch it?
You guys pointed that out, but...
Oh, no, I'm asking not the listener.
Yes, yeah. Yep. And so maybe one of my takeaways is thinking to Heroescape too, is like alternate ways, like more than one way to win. That's not just totally eliminate your enemy. I guess, because Junkernauts, I think there's like the my favorite version of it is the version where you're also like trying to get as far as you can across into the opponent's territory. And I like that as like, okay, well, you could win by eliminating everyone, or you could win by doing this other thing, which might be getting to a checkpoint. Or
was there a Rat King at one point? Or like a king character that you were trying to please?
Yeah, you're the leader.
It wasn't a rat, though.
No.
That's just my imprinting.
I'm not sure where that... There are no rats.
Yeah, it was just the Nutcracker then. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Post-apocalyptic world of Junkernauts.
That was just how I imagined him.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was a rat model thing that was there. Oh, well.
Yeah. I guess another thing about Minis games is progression is pretty much entirely negative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as the game progresses, you lose things.
Yeah, you don't level up, you don't...
Yeah, and it's not like chess, where as things die, more moves become
available. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In general, you don't really gain new tactical options, I guess, unless you destroy an opponent's unit that was limiting you somehow.
Oh, sure.
But for the most part, you get fewer and fewer options as the game goes on. And... I don't know, thinking about, you know, other games, this doesn't seem like it would be that compelling, but it doesn't seem to matter in Minis games. They're still fun.
Yeah. Well, and I think Heroescape did a nice thing in that as your units get killed off, you just get to do more actions with
units
that are left.
You don't lose action economy, which is really important.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just you lose the surprise element of what's going to happen next. Like, oh, right. My sniper's going to go again and again and again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Necromolds, you do lose the action economy.
You do.
Because in that game, your actions scale with the size of your army.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you activate each unit type at a time?
Yeah. So, like, all units of one type get to go.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And most likely you're going to lose when you're down to just one. But that's, again, like we talked about, the storytelling can be strong in these kind of games where it's like, well, I have one unit left against this pretty sizable army, but somehow I still pulled it off.
Yep.
Like, that would feel great.
The counterattacks help a lot with that.
Oh, for sure.
In Necromolds. Because if you keep getting lucky... You can just keep killing your attackers, even though they have more actions.
Which can feel bad for the attacker as well. It's like, hey, I had like three guys coming after you, even one that was the same size.
Yeah.
Like, I should have won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you weren't hiding around all the rocks and things, you know.
And I think it comes down to, can you feel clever?
Yes.
That's one of my main like litmus tests for games is, can you feel clever in how you're doing it, and can you outsmart your opponent in some way?
That's
like,
so clever.
If you can do that in a war game, that's a cool feeling.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Often it's, you can't.
Well, part of the cleverness, too, with war games, a lot of these where you have to build your army, it comes from that finding those kind of synergies between different unit types or, like, you know, finding those strategies. And that's when you feel clever is the creation as well.
Yeah,
and the creativity.
Sure. Yep.
Always got to have creativity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I say often you can't feel clever in it, I'm thinking of the situation where there's one unit left. And it's like,
oh, I see.
I only got like a little bit left.
I'm going to move and then attack.
Yeah.
It's really cool if you can set up a game where that unit still has a chance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which in Heroescape, it definitely does.
Yeah.
In Necromolds, I mean, you did pretty well.
I was surprised.
If it was a bit swingier, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
In X, I don't know about X-Wing. If you've got...
I mean, that's what happened with our game. Like, I had two on one, and he beat one, and then the other one went floating away in space. So that... Well, he also said that was the coward's way, because he ran away from me, so that I would just float off into space.
Yeah. So that, I guess that is another thing you probably want to have in a Minis game, is like, is there a way for someone who's almost dead to just turn things around?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there always an option for victory, even if it's remote?
Yeah.
As a possibility.
Yeah.
That's one of Mark Rosewater's top 10 things every game needs. I was just looking at that article again, the developer behind Magic for many, many years. But that's one of his key things is there a catch-up feature in the game?
But not just like a mechanical blue shell necessarily, but like a means to actually make it so that you still see a potential strategy to win and not just like be a kingmaker or, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like I like the kind of what you're alluding to, that there's less of a chance that I am going to win.
Yeah.
But it's, and it's getting narrower and narrower chance that I could win.
With each die rolled.
But you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance. Yeah. Never tell me the odds.
So, I guess we've talked a little bit about counterattacks.
Yeah.
Should you have counterattacks? Let's say you're making a minis game. Should you have counterattacks in your game or not? Is it a good mechanic to have?
I'm gonna respond for the two different scales of war games. Lots of dudes, I don't want counterattacks. Fewer dudes, I do want counterattacks. I'll say that.
Mm. Okay.
I can elaborate too.
Yeah, yes, please.
So, lots of dudes, counterattacking results in more time spent with each thing, each interaction. Trying to track, maybe the counterattacks are variable because, you know, those games tend to be more intense with the rules and with numbers. So, like, do they have a counterattack figure? Is it a die result? Are you comparing more information? You just have so many more units doing all of that together. It can just drag it out a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like, if you attack, then the counterattack is then the strategy that the other player uses to come after you. It's actually like more of that kind of counterattack as opposed to unit to unit. For individual units, like, you know, X-Wing, should X-Wing have a counterattack? X-Wing doesn't, right? There's no...
Nothing built in. I'm sure there are units.
It's an engagement.
There are almost certainly units that have... there's always going to be some unit that has some ability.
And it's technically not a counterattack, but it kind of is. Because if you're in the engagement phase and they're shooting at each other and they're facing each other, then they can both hit each other.
Sure, yeah.
But if you position yourself so you're outside of the counterattack...
But it's... I guess the main difference is it's not based on being attacked.
Right.
Like, if two people attack you, you don't get to...
It's two different attack actions as opposed to the response to an attack.
I see that as the biggest advantage of counterattacks myself, is the fact that they scale depending on how many people are attacking you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a built-in catch-up mechanism for if someone has an action advantage.
Yeah, and so, like, and that's what I love when you have more of a hero situation where it's an individual unit that has health. Like, them being able to counterattack feels a lot better because they're more epic. They're more going through this whole thing. And I really like that storytelling that's happening.
So, counterattack for heroes, but not.
Okay, well, my take, I'll refer to your earlier thought on using defense dice and, I rolled really well, but the best I can do is not get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, and maybe you've thought about this, but having maybe you rolled really well as defender, then that triggers a counterattack.
Yeah.
I think counterattacks are kind of frustrating when you know they're built in and you're just...
It's automatic. Well,
I have to attack this person. It's kind of like touching something pokey. It's right. Like, I was just going to say
thorns, which is a Slay the Spire thing.
Oh. But,
yeah.
Yeah. But if it's not guaranteed and if it happens... You know, maybe a fourth at a time or something. That could be interesting.
Okay.
I really like it being like the result of the die. So something that has a really high defense. Let's say you have like a duelist character that has like a 5-die defense. And you're going in with your little like orc minion that has a 1 attack. It's like, okay, they're probably going to just die. So do I want to actually attack them? Or do I want to just like block them with them for a second and do something else? So yeah, it opens it up for more... thought when you're dealing with those more unique units, which I really like.
You know, that reminds me a little bit of what's the name of that auto battler that we played, the one where you combine two fighters?
Oh, that's mine. Tag team.
Tag team. Yes, because I remember in tag team the defenses.
Mm-hmm.
If you countered an attack with them, you got to do something special, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's not guaranteed because
the decks are changing every time.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, that's an interesting idea. So it's not just like the defense counterattacks, but maybe there's, if you roll the defense dice really well, there's something cool that happens.
That orc could still beat that fencer or whatever it is that has the 5 defense if they all just roll blanks and he rolls 1 hit. You know, like, and then it feels really epic. Like, this one little orc just took out one of their heroes. This is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just creates those moments for more storytelling, which you gotta love that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so I guess we should probably give our takeaways. I think my takeaway is something that you said earlier, Charlie, which is on the subject of HP. We were talking about how, you know, HP can be boring if you're just chipping away at it and nothing's happening. But then if you have other things about the context of the situation changing, like the ships are moving around as they're losing HP, then suddenly it's interesting again. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe my takeaway is that if you want a game with HP, then combat should involve more than just reducing the HP. Because it's boring if the HP, if the only thing that changes is the HP is chipping away.
Yeah, you did two hits, you got two damage, right? Two damage again. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there needs to be some other dimension that is changing. If the dead or alive status of the unit
flip around, do a target lock on the guy behind me, and then shoot past him the next turn. And
yeah, so movement with spaceship dogfights works great.
Yeah,
I'm sure there are other things that you could use as an extra dimension. Along which things can change.
Yeah.
But if you want HP, it shouldn't be the only thing that is changing as a result of the combat.
I've definitely designed that game, and it's definitely boring. So yeah, I agree with that completely.
Yeah, and is there a way you could make it not just about the numbers? Maybe there's different colors or...
I see what you're...
we're
maybe some candy?
Candyland.
Candyland tactics.
Tractors. That was my first thought. But then I thought, you know, like, maybe it's thematically like, oh, you have to do fire damage to this person to kill them.
Mm.
And there's no HP. It's just like you have to do this certain type of damage to kill someone. And, oh, but they are shielded because they're on an ice platform or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just like I always look for ways to reduce numbers in games. And
They're on an ice platform. You burn them. They survive, but now the ice has melted and they're in the water. Something changed.
Yes.
Oh, now they take electricity damage and die.
Yes. Are we making Pokemon the game?
Yeah, I think
let's
so.
Do it.
Pokemon tactics. Still needs to happen.
But yeah, HP changing does not feel that exciting. So something else needs to change if you're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Pokemon, if you're just tackling every time and nothing's changing, that's just not a very exciting game. Sorry, Pokemon.
I know. I have thought, man, I should play Pokemon again because that was so fun.
I've been playing Pokemon. Okay, I'll be glad to talk about that.
Oh, okay. what was my thought? Oh, gosh. It was about HP. Oh, like X-Wing, the other way that's kind of cool is when once your shields are down on your ship, you take a critical damage, you actually, instead of taking the HP hit, you flip a card and it has a, this really bad thing happened.
Big explosion happened on your ship. What happens now?
Now you have an extra challenge or something.
Fuel leak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. That is a way that X-Wing does that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something besides just
dynamic damage.
Yeah.
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 Or, Thunder Road Vendetta. Does that too, where you get hit enough and you start taking these like crazy effects.
That's where I saw that before. I was wondering where I saw it before.
Yep. Yeah. And I've said with, I think, Galaxy Trucker too, if you can make a game where you're losing and getting destroyed and it's still fun and funny,
and entertaining.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Did Nemesis do that too?
Probably.
Maybe.
Nemesis did a lot of stuff.
So for my takeaway, it's going to be something that I don't know that I've fully talked about in any of the games. But Necromolds has a little ruler that's like a little triangle. And that is the different types of movement or different types of range. So it's the same little cardboard ruler for movement and range. Very, like, it's a little bit funky sometimes trying to, like, measure distances between the units. But, like, you know, it's pretty light anyway. But just having three different numbers, I think, is a really good baseline start for a lot of these miniatures games because it has like a small, medium, and long range, just like X-Wing has for at least the ranges for attack. Obviously, movement, they have a lot more dynamic stuff going on there. But having three ranges, I think, is a really solid starting place, having a far, medium, and short range.
As opposed to like taking out a tape measure.
Yeah, like 6 inches or even 6 hexes. I really just like, oh yeah, you can just place it over and just get a feel for where it's at. And that's just, okay, and now you don't have a grid system. It looks really clean. I think that's a really cool way to go about it. I do love hexes. I do love square grids. But for miniature war games, I do like it being kind of more like a simulative experience or simulation where you have more just natural terrain.
Yeah.
And interacting with that.
And in Necromodes, it's kind of like, if there's a debate about it, oh, yeah, are you close enough to attack me? Well, whatever, it's fine because we both get to roll dice and it's fun anyways when you come up and
That one's a super short game for any kind of miniature game, which is great. But yeah, so I think having three different ranges is huge. And I actually use that in my RPG. I have near, close, and far. I just think, like, having that simple understanding, like, how much damage is this? How far away is this? How big of a radius is this? Like, oh, I have an idea. Very simple. Not, like, 6 squares or 30 feet or, you know, 6 inches. It's like, you get an idea for that after a while, but it's a lot more specific and takes up a little bit more time.
Yeah. Well, I already said a takeaway, but my second takeaway.
Did you?
My tabletop takeaway from this episode is that I have not that much experience with miniatures war games, really. And it's not like I thought of one of my favorite genres, but actually it was very fun to play these games and talk about them. And I feel like there's a lot of design fodder here to chew on. Obviously, this is a very epic episode. I don't know what we're at.
We're not short.
We always guess what our episode lengths are after we stop the recording.
I know we're not at 15 minutes. That's for sure.
No. But I think it's cool because this is actually going to be our last in-person recording for quite a while.
Yeah.
If you've been listening.
The last wrap-up episode.
Yep. Trevor, literally, it was just your last day at work here in today Minnesota.
Yeah, so now you know, well, if you know me, now you know the exact day that I no longer worked in Minnesota, which is weird. But yeah, here it is. Here we are.
Well, the episode's going to air
later. Yeah. But like, oh, I guess you'll know because on my Facebook, you'll see what, never mind.
That's all right, though. But listeners, never fear. We are going to figure out a way to continue doing episodes, play games together online, and record online together.
And maybe visit each other and then try to record in person sometime.
Oh, yeah.
Again.
Yep.
Some more.
So, yeah. But it's always enjoyable podcasting with you guys. So.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I am going to miss coming over to your apartment, Charlie, and just hanging out around a table and talking about games for hours.
Oh, yeah. You'll be back.
Yeah.
We'll get you back at least a little.
You'll be back.
Yep. All right. Well, with that, tune in next week when we figure out what our topic is going to be that we play online together. Yep.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.